Previously on The Scope.
I don't know.
Well, there's no pleasing you, is there?
Everyone jumps the shark about 5 minutes after they do something new.
And when did we jump the shark? Show six?
No, we still haven't.
We still haven't.
We're not big enough yet.
We haven't made it good yet.
Yeah.
See, we have to have some sort of success. Right. Then we can jump the shark. Until then, we're just approaching the ramp.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show that accepts Canadian dollars at full value. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope,
we talk about our favorite video gaming moments, Foos and kids get the review treatment, and Shane pitches a fit and storms out when Jared can't get his monitor mix right.
And now, here are your hosts, Jared, Adam, and Shane.
Hello, hello, everybody. This is episode 38 of The Scope Train. We keep chugging on down the tracks.
What number?
38.
Wow.
Just keeps on going.
Each time I forget, and it seems ridiculous.
My name is Shane. The two other voices you will be hearing during this
We've program. Been on the air longer than Andy Richter's, any of Andy Richter's shows combined.
That's Adam.
Yes.
And that's Jared.
I would like to be known as Cosmo going forward. Please.
And we are destroying Andy Richter. A little bit of a trivial note here. Our professional announcer, Tony Partington, says it's the only show that accepts Canadian dollars at full value. Interesting thing happened this past week. The Canadian dollar is now worth exactly or more than the American dollar. So
it's been going, it's been fluctuating. It's been on the cusp. It's been up. It's been down. Yeah. Right there in that even mark.
What does that mean for society?
It means that the U.S. dollar isn't nearly as strong as it used to be.
In 5 years, like 5 years ago, the Canadian dollar was worth 63 cents of an American. Worth, or 6,300. Yeah.
I'm going on record as saying I blame Hillary.
You do?
Hillary Duff?
Yeah,
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Duff. From Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Yes. Oh, I love that girl. She was so shallow. Well, everybody get ready. It's rant mode. I haven't done this in a while, but it is one of my specialties. I've got something to bitch about, and I'm going to do it.
Can you start it by saying, I don't mean to go off on a rant, but...
I need my heavy metal dick from Big Brother music.
Yeah, get me going.
Yeah.
So here's the deal, everybody. For those of you that don't know me and don't hang out with me, which...
is most really... of the world, yeah, I would say.
Exactly, including Adam, believe it or not.
Oh.
My cable has been dogging me since May.
Of 04.
Yes. No. No, of 07, ought 07. And the situation with it has become dire.
Yikes.
Know, this week... is fall TV preview.
Yeah.
And, you know, it started this past Sunday when the Vikings game started, which, you know, is a big deal for us, even though they're terrible. We won't get into that, Adam, but...
Thank you.
They're...
Let's just not talk about football. We're 3 weeks in, and we never needed to talk
about it. We've given up hope already.
Yeah,
pretty much.
But we turn on the television, the TV, as the kids would call it, and the entire screen is covered with pixels and cutting out... I found out later that Comcast, which is my cable company, and they're terrible, by the way, it's called micro-blocking. That's their technical term for it. I just call it shit on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was so bad. You know, sometimes it would happen in the past few months, this micro-blocking, where you could actually watch TV. It just would be an annoyance. You know, it wouldn't be unwatchable.
This shows up, like, how often?
During the Vikings game, it was constant, and... it would get so bad, the signal would get so bad where the screen would just go black. And Jared was there to confirm that. He saw it.
I can confirm that it was terrible.
Yes.
Thanks, Jared. No one believed him before that.
And like I said, this has been going on since May to varying degrees. Sometimes it's been more tolerable than others. But needless to say, we have not had a perfect cable picture. And Adam, I'd like to ask you a question, a guess. I'd like you to guess, actually. How many... Time Warner, how many Comcast technicians do you think have been out to my house to fix the cable since May?
Well, it should take a maximum of, I'd say, two visits, but I guess it's more than that. So how about six?
You're absolutely right, actually.
Wow.
In the past year, we've had 7 techs. One came out for a completely unrelated event, but we've had 6 guys come out. And a few interesting notes about what happens when your cable is fixed. Most of the time when they send someone out to your place, they're not really trained to do the heavy work.
No.
So they can come out and, you know, check your cables. They'll check the connections. They might go outside and check. But they're not even given the correct tools, you know, the meters to be able to check the flow of the cable signal. I mean, they can do limited stuff, but not the really important things if you're having serious problems. And maybe that's just a factor of most people's cable problems aren't that big.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then they can pay those guys less, too.
Yes. So, I mean, they don't really know anything. So, in our experience, we had the first 3 visits were guys that didn't really know what they were doing. Or not, I wouldn't say they didn't know what they were doing. They just weren't trained and given the proper equipment to do the job right. So, it took call number 4 where, you know, if you've had any experience with dealing with customer service, especially with cable companies, you get on the phone and you have to wait. And it hasn't been too bad on the wait, which, you know, if it would, I think I would probably explode. But they go through the same series of questions. Is your internet running slowly? Do you have everything plugged in? Is your television turned on? Is your box turned on? Mm-hmm. By the 10th call you've made to these idiots, you know, you can tell them what the diagnostic screens mean. You can reboot.
Exactly.
You can reboot the system yourself. You probably can tell them more than what they know at that point. And, yeah, it really started to get bad in late July, early August. And, it's not too bad in the middle of summertime when there aren't things you want to watch on television. Mm-hmm. But
Just
Rock of Love and all the Hannah Montana reruns I can get my hands on.
Mm-hmm. Which is 0.
Which, yeah, with my cables bad, I really can't get them, can I?
I wouldn't miss it, actually. I think I'd be happy I couldn't see Hannah Montana. I might read. Which I did for about 4 days because I had no power.
Very good. Yeah, Jared has his own problem, and that's with the utilities companies.
I tell you, we had some storms recently here, and just as a little sidebar here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's thunder and lightning. I'm like, crap, my power's going to go out again. I know it. And actually, last weekend, I don't know what it was, but there was actually a couple little flickers. The TV went off, the power just went, boom, and it was back. Nothing really turned off, but it was like, son of a bitch is going
to
go out again.
You're in a very bad location.
I know. Anyway, back to you.
And I have heard from the people at Comcast, you know, some of these techs. There he goes. Some of these techs that are coming out, they'll give me some of the secret inside scoop. And part of it is that they have major citywide problems sometimes. And they're actually, this area where we broadcast from is having a problem where they're seeing these issues. Now, that doesn't
count yourself among the lucky if you hear what we're saying.
Yes. Now, that doesn't mean that the problems I'm having are tied to that. Clearly, they're not. But, it has just been utterly ridiculous. This past week, we had a guy come out, and no problems were fixed. I mean, he ended up changing one cable from the cable box to the wall, and it did help, and I'm hoping that will stick with it. But the next day, we still had the stuttering, and I don't really know what to do.
More micro-blocking?
Yes, more micro-blocking, as they say. I've got a call in to their customer service people, but you know what? In typical Comcast fashion, they have not called me back, so we'll see what happens. I would switch to satellite in a second if it wasn't such a pain in the ass and all the changes you have to go through.
Like what? The only real big issue for me is internet.
Well, that's a key part. I mean, yeah. You get your cable, your internet service has to change. I also don't like the fact that I have to have special boxes for every television. I don't like the fact that I have to mount equipment to my house to get it. I've heard that the whole issue of the signal going out when weather is bad is kind of overrated. It doesn't really happen as much. But you know what? I would really not want to. I'd rather not deal with that. That being said, that being said, I'm dealing with it times 10.
Yeah.
So that leads me into my question for you guys: is the cable system a monopoly? You know, they would argue that it is not. That you have a choice.
Who would argue that?
The cable companies themselves. Should we be given the option of having different cable companies or, you know, is everything fine? That's the question I want to ask you guys. Obviously, you know where I stand. I think it's a bunch of BS, and it's ridiculous, and I think it's deep-pocketed big business screwing us over. But you gentlemen may have a different opinion. Jared.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this. I think there should be at least one more competitor, if for nothing else, to encourage them to have at least some level of customer service. There were nothing but problems here when our area turned over from Time Warner to Comcast. Yeah. There were channels out. There was all kinds of programming guides were wrong. It was just all kinds of goofy stuff. But
that was a year ago. And the funny thing about that was we complained about Time Warner being terrible. Now I feel like Time Warner is the gold standard of cable systems and cable providers.
It was probably, if not as bad, nearly as bad.
Probably. So what do you think, Adam? You're always very insightful about things.
Well, I used to work for a cable company, RCN, on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Does that exist anymore?
I don't know. I don't know.
I've never heard of such a
place. The dot-com days. Well, that's sure. Because they only exist in large markets where there actually are multiple cable companies.
So you're telling me there are markets that have multiple cable companies?
Many.
That is crazy.
Many. I would say up and down the East Coast, every large market, D.C., Philly, New York, Boston, they all have at least two.
Is Cablevision, is that a big one on the East Coast? Am I crazy?
Yes.
Okay.
But anyway.
Wow, there we go.
Yes, applies to both, actually.
To your question, I don't know. It'd be good. I mean, the issue, of course, is that it's the cable company's lines that the cable goes through.
Sure.
So
to deregulate that would be a big issue.
Right. I mean, and...
Well, weren't the telephone companies forced to allow other DSL carriers to use their wire?
They're forced to let other local phone carriers use their copper,
that's true.
But, I mean, how many... who else do we have other than Quest here?
Nobody.
Right. I mean, it happened.
You had a choice for a while, and then it slowly faded back to what it was.
Because all those companies went out of business because no one uses them. I mean, it'd be nice. It's not, you know, the way it's going to be. For what it's worth, I have... I'm having internet problems and have been having internet problems since I moved into the place that I'm in. Sometimes four times a night, sometimes it goes 3 weeks without messing up, but it'll drop the connection, usually right in the middle of when I'm playing WoW.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what I was having a couple weeks ago. It would just suddenly throttle way down.
Yes. And I'll look at the cable modem and it'll sit there for a second like it usually does. You know, two lights on statically, two blinking, and then they'll all go off for a second, and it'll power cycle. You know, really, each light comes on individually by itself, and then I'll look at it, and I'll be like, "All right." And sometimes I have to unplug it by itself. Anyway, every time I've called twice, the first time they replaced the modem, it didn't do anything. Second time they said that they'd come out and check stuff and maybe replace the whole line that goes from the central thing to my house, and that's what they're going to do next time they come out now. But
who knows when that'll be?
Well, no, I mean, it's up to me to reschedule it because they messed up last week. Anyway, they've been good on the phone for and responsive. But
what if they don't solve it? Then you're in deep crap.
Then you should threaten to go to satellite. Now
that's kind of the kicker. I'm not sure if they really care that much. I might be one of those problem customers.
You've commanded so many resources to this point, they'd be happy to cut you loose, probably.
As far as I'm concerned, they need to send an entire army of technicians to my place. And if they have to replace every single box on every single telephone pole leading up to my house until they get the problem solved, I feel that's what they should have to do. But, hey, that's just me being crazy.
I can't believe
I'm totally crazy.
I cannot believe you're the only one in your neighborhood having this problem.
Yeah.
Somebody else, either they just don't care or they don't notice.
It happens on all your boxes?
Something, but...
Actually, what happens is I have one cable box, and then I have just the direct line going into a number of televisions. The micro blocking only happens on the digital box.
Mm-hmm.
The signal can get so bad sometimes that it will bleed over to the analog signal, and you'll get lines in the screen. Sometimes it'll cut out.
Okay.
But it doesn't do the same thing. But the picture quality is definitely not there.
Okay. Because, that's the same thing I have at my house, where Jess is the only, in the living room, has the... DVR from the cable company, and then mine I don't because I have it going to the TiVo.
Sure.
And I never notice that stuff, but sometimes when I'm watching stuff in the living room, I'll see for a half a second in the middle of a show, everything'll pixelate in one section and then it'll unpixelate.
That pixelation is normal, and I think I was told that if it happens, a few times every few hours when you watch it, that's totally normal, and you should just expect that. But
it's artifacts from them over compressing everything because they want to maximize their bandwidth,
which screws everybody over anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, I've had enough talking about this.
Fantastic. It was nice. It was nice back in the day when only three of us on each block had cable.
Yeah.
Or had digital cable and cable modems, and there was no you always got the top bandwidth, and there was almost no sharing going on.
I remember back in the day, actually, and this was probably in the mid '80s. My father climbed up a telephone pole and got us free cable by just loosening up some screws. So he was probably 25 feet in the air, drunk, at the top of this telephone pole, getting us free cable.
That's
funny. They didn't know. I mean, obviously, they don't. They couldn't check that stuff back then except to climb up the pole and take care of it.
Yeah.
So that's my poor father went falling down. His hair was all black and his face was smoking. It was pretty crazy stuff.
Fantastic.
So we have one more order of business before we move on to the rest of the show.
I was going to talk about something.
What were you going
to
talk about?
So neither of you have been to my place, but basically I live on the cusp of the ghetto, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know exactly where you live. Okay. I used to live in that area myself.
It's an area going through a lot of change. Like a lot of the old buildings are either being torn down or renovated and turned into like really nice condos
sure.
and stuff like that.
So all the poor ghetto people can't live there.
Exactly. Except for, finally, you know, get them out. terrible person. I know. to make things even better, they closed the Lowry Avenue Bridge, so mm-hmm. they can't get in.
No, nope. Lock them out.
It's an ideal situation, you're saying.
Building walls, the Great Wall of
right.
Northeast Minneapolis, going all around Adams
Joint. You can see
joint.
From space.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look, if you watch the news, North is not a healthy area.
No, it's pretty, pretty troubled.
So there's one build, not one building left, but there's one that's basically in my backyard. Like we share an alley with them, and it's essentially like a slumlord's haven. You know, it's like
sure.
it's just disgusting and run down and everything, and there's always cops and there's always, you know, loud music and mm-hmm. just noise and everything.
Those
you know?
Teeny boppers with their loud
exactly.
music.
Well, like, and I'm like, can we not listen to High School Musical 2 again? But they're always like yelling at me that they love it and then shooting. So I have to let them go. Anyway, I came home this morning and the parking lot was empty, which I was like, that's weird.
Uh-huh.
And but I mean, I didn't get home till 10:30 or something. So I was like, maybe they're all at work. And then everyone laughs.
Right.
So then today, when I was leaving to come here, I looked and there were still no cars. And then I looked at one of the doors and it was like sealed up and there was like stickers.
Oh,
like,
the condemned.
Right. So I'm pretty sure I got condemned. So like. I called
Jess. So was it like an apartment building?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I called Jess and like we did a telephone high five and
party on. You
so
know?
One of two things will happen now. Either it will remain a condemned, unoccupied building and the drug traffic will increase.
Perfect. Because, right? Yeah, perfect.
Or I'm hoping that it was actually just bought by some, you know, or, you know, it will be bought.
Maybe
by
bought by the city or something.
By the city or by like, you know, I mean, just
eminent domain
across the street on Broadway. There's those like new condos going in. So I'm like, maybe they'll just tear it down. Put condos yeah. in, or
bring some rich knob, more rich knobs into the neck of
exactly.
your neck of the woods.
Exactly.
That's what you need.
Very
and then
nice.
And then your rent doubles.
Well, congratulations, exactly. Adam, for pushing minorities out of your neighborhood. I appreciate that.
I didn't. I'm just cheering it
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I think you had a lot to do with it. Going to all those council meetings.
Right. I get involved.
Standing up, making speeches.
This is what happens. I get unemployed, yeah. and I get involved.
If anyone knows Adam, that's the last thing he would do. It's for the record. Jared, our last order of business is to recap where we are in the Scope World Series of Pop Culture. I mean, it's coming up at some point. Do you have any information that you'd like to give our rabid fans?
Well, anyone watching the website has noticed that recruitment is closed. We've our deadline has passed. I'm not going to say that we met our projected goals, but I think we've got enough people to fit into the format that we've decided to run with. And I don't know if I want to reveal that quite yet. We're going to work out all the details, but... we'll just say we've got our teams, and I think we're on track.
And now what do you expect from the teams themselves now that we've got them locked in? What do they have to do for us right now?
I'd go through it, except I know they didn't listen, so what's the point?
Blowjobs all around.
No, what we're looking for from our teams, for anyone who is listening, those of you who have come to us saying, I have a team, what I need from you is first names of everyone on the team, some email addresses, and
Social
if you come up
numbers.
With something, if you're witty, come up with a witty pop culture related team name, and if you really, really want to go the extra mile, you can write yourself a wacky little bio so it saves us the trouble of having to write one. But hey.
Adam, you need to get on Jess and finally do something for the show and get her to even tell us who's going to be on her team. Do you know
she already did.
Who's
no,
on her
she
team?
Hasn't told them.
Oh, okay.
She hasn't responded to the official email.
Oh,
so.
I didn't realize that.
So yell at her.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't pushed it because we're, you know.
Also,
yeah.
if you name your team blowjobs all around, you'll get an extra point from me.
I would be fine with that.
There you go. There's the point.
Thanks.
So, yeah, so send that information to comments@thescopeshow.com. I think in the coming week here. I'll be sending out another email to those involved and catching everyone up on where we are and what they can expect.
Tentatively planned to record in the last...
On Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
Eve and day.
No, so no traveling.
We're going to be doing Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, and New Year's.
And possibly President's Day for the finals.
Arbor Day.
Not MLK, though.
No.
We respect that.
No, I have a dream, so therefore we must take the day off.
And eat.
Very nice. So what's coming up on this show, gentlemen?
Why are you asking us? You have the notes.
Because I don't have anything planned. I thought you guys had that taken care of.
We're going to wing it.
We, in honor of the biggest video game release of the year.
Of ever.
Ever. I'm not talking about Cabela's Big Buck Hunter 4. Yes, I'm talking
really?
About Halo 3. Jared, Adam, and myself are going to go through our top five video game moments. Now, we're not saying that it's going to be, you know, Pac-Man is released or what else we got.
These are personal tales. I don't know.
Jared plays Super Mario Brothers.
You just took my top two.
Uh-oh.
So.
Adam, you needed to do better than that. But these will be kind of fun.
My number one is the creation of Space War back in, like, 1962.
Boy, you really are a nerd.
The very first video game.
11 years before you were born. So I think that'll be very interesting. We haven't really covered a lot of video game stuff, so it's a first for us. Also, as you all know, the fall television season has started, and I haven't got to see any of it because my cable's been out. But I'm going to pretend like I watched the television program Kid Nation, and we're also going to review a big fall musical release from the Fighters of Foo. What's that album called, Jared? I forget.
Echoes and something.
It's a bunch of words.
Echoes and... Hold on.
Cabela. Maybe we can just wait for the review. We'll get
Echo,
to it.
Silence, Patience, and Grace.
There you go.
You can see it's going to get a very big score. We've committed the name to memory. So we
in this age of listening to it in iTunes, I just, you know, song titles and album titles don't sink in anymore.
You've always,
not
sorry.
Unless they're things that you remember, like Blowjobs All Around.
Exactly.
There you go. See, and that's my next album title.
And of course, we'll be doing...
Been searching.
We'll be doing... your latest news and what's coming soon in the world of pop culture. So,
right,
everybody,
on.
This is episode 38 of The Scope. Stick around.
You've got questions. Tony's got answers. It's time for Ask Tony. Dear Tony, who would win in a fight between Wolverine and Batman? My money is on Wolverine. Super healing and adamantium. Not even bats can top that. Signed, Marvelous in Milwaukee.
Dear Marvelous, I've put a lot of deep thought into your question. I've weighed the strengths and weaknesses of both characters. I've read all of their comics and memorized their origin stories. I've even consulted with a number of comic book historians. And after all of that, I have a definitive answer. Who gives a shit, you fucking dork? While you think about men in tights, I'll be on the town, getting down with beautiful woman after beautiful woman. Thanks for being a loyal fan. This is The Scope.
If you have a question you'd like to ask Tony, send your question...
Wow, are you terrible? Why don't you leave the voiceover work to the professionals, pal? Don't you have some girls to not ask out? If you would like me, Tony Partington, to impose my advice on you and set you on a path to glory, send your tales of woe and misery to... AskTony@thescopeshow.com. I promise not to be too destructive, but let's face it, the truth hurts. And it hurts some of you more than others. Now, back to The Scope.
Everybody, I hope you enjoyed listening to that little segment of music from 50 Cent's new album.
50 Cent does Super Mario World.
He's gone happy. Yes, it is the theme to Super Mario World, and that means only one thing. Today, your Scope host will cover their five favorite video game moments. Like I said previously, these may not be the most momentous occasions in terms of video games, but they will be interesting and they will be fun. So let's kick it off, Jared.
Yeah.
With moment number
five.
Number five. That's
there it
right.
is.
So we're going to start this with Adam, and he's going to tell us what his number five top moments of video games.
A lot of mine aren't moments as much as they are, like, you know, larger things.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm the same way.
So, well,
but that's okay. Hey, it's compelling. Yeah. We'll have a conversation, and then people can write in.
Do it.
So mine, my number five, and this is really hard for me. I didn't realize we're actually rating them.
Number five.
Thank you.
Work it.
But I went with my friends and I and our 10 or 12 or sometimes on occasion 14-hour marathons of Super Street Fighter 2, which was the perfect version of Street Fighter 2.
What system did you play that on?
Super Nintendo.
Okay. See, yes. I liked it on the Genesis because I liked the Genesis 6-button controller.
See, I...
Did they have Super Street Fighter 2 for Genesis?
They
it
did,
was Championship
yes.
Edition, right?
Wow. Yeah.
It was Street Fighter 2's Championship Edition.
Right, right, right.
And then Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, I think, was the last one for the Super Nintendo.
Right.
But yeah, see, I could never get used to the Genesis 6-button controller, yeah. And in fact, actually bought an adapter that would let you use a Super Nintendo controller on the Genesis just to, you know, for the 6-button.
Sure.
Because I got so used to it, and I still to this day feel the Super Nintendo controller is the perfect controller.
It was fantastic.
It's perfectly made. Anyway, I loved it. And
what year was that, like 94
I would
somewhere?
Say yeah.
Yeah, and that's about right.
Kenan, well, the big debate obviously is how do you pronounce it, Ryu or Ryu?
Yeah, we always said Ryu in the day, but I think it's Ryu.
I think it's Ryu also. Oh, we always said
so
Ryu
your
also.
Favorite character was
it was Ken and Ryu, and usually went, and that was the one where I think it was Ken's fireball was a little bit stronger and mm-hmm. Ryu's uppercut was a little bit stronger, like, so like they were slightly different than one another but essentially the same. And I think it was Ken that I used the most. With
Jared,
the red,
did you have a
red outfit?
Did you have a favorite character? Of course you did.
You know, I started out with Chun-Li, and then I think I'd play Guile for a while, but eventually I settled on Ken and Ryu. I'm calling him Ryu because that's the way enough. I remember
Chun-Li I always liked because of the wall jumping. That, yes. Like, when, if you could get good at that and you got someone that wasn't expecting it, you could dominate.
Back in those days, I worked at both Toys R Us and another little independent video game store. And Street Fighter was obviously the big game of the day. And, you know, a lot of times we had nothing to do, so we would just practice. And then when the kids would come in during summer vacation, nothing better to do, we would just play them and utterly destroy them. And we got so good at that game that my character of choice was Dhalsim.
Uh-huh.
And I could dominate with Dhalsim. And not only would I make the little children mad, but I would also make my friends mad because I could play them pretty well with Dhalsim, and that was a character nobody ever wanted.
Right.
Besides Zangief, because his special moves were so tough to pull off.
Yeah. But you had to get in so close.
I'm going to call that foreshadowing.
Dhalsim,
just for fun.
That's foreshadowing.
I could never play him very well, and I hated playing against him because anyone that could play him really well would dominate.
Yoga Torpedo. So. Yes. He's got everything.
Yes.
So let's move on to Jared with his number five moment.
This is not a great moment, but this is a monumental moment for me.
Okay.
Back in the day, like way, way back, we had a Pong machine, and we loved this Pong machine. We played, you know,
really?
We played hockey on it. We played tennis on it. We played ping pong on it, and it was all the same. But
did it have wood finish?
It did have wood finish, I believe. I'm trying to remember. I was real young. So one summer, we take a road trip in an rented RV out to the East Coast. We go through Ohio, Pennsylvania. Our eventual destination is New York, and it's a fun trip. My only time ever being to New York. We get back. Return the RV, and then the next day we discover that the little RF adapter that you need to hook up your Pong machine to the television was left on the rented RV.
Oh, no.
And that was the end of Pong for us. No, the Pong machine was useless at that point.
It never came back? You never tried to get a replacement?
I think we went and tried to back to the RV rental place and had already gotten rented out or something, and it was just like, it was gone. And I don't know. I mean, I was five, so
back in those
the whole concept of finding replacement parts wasn't something I knew about.
Back in those days, you probably didn't even have a phone number to call. I mean, you'd have to write a letter, you know, send a telegraph.
So I was very sad that the Pong era ended rather abruptly for me, with part being lost.
Wait, I thought like you guys didn't even have cable, but you had Pong? Or is that,
what are you gonna say?
Was that Shane that
my parents were divorced, and my dad tried to give me love through Pong, I guess. I don't know.
That's how I got all my video games. Dad kept buying me.
That might be the common theme here. Divorce brings video games into our lives.
And that's my number five.
Okay, my number five, and you know, I actually did research to find out what the year was, so I'm going to give a little perspective.
Because Shane likes to put a lot of work into stuff.
The year, everyone, was 1996.
Setting up a story, I love it.
And what I'm talking about is the release of Resident Evil for the PlayStation.
Wow.
Resident Evil, as you all know, is pretty much the first real entry into the world of survival horror. And back in those days, games really didn't set up any sort of tension or drama, and I really feel like Resident Evil was the game that did that. I mean, it had you know, violence that was sort of over the top, but very horror movie-esque. You had tension, you know, and anxiety set up within the game with dogs jumping through windows. I mean, that happened right away in the game, and when that occurred, you knew this game was going to be something
exciting.
Anytime
dogs are running at you, attacking you, it's just like a primal thing with people.
It's just like in North Minneapolis.
Exactly. It's like Adam's house or his apartment. You know, it also had the lack of ammo and a really crappy control scheme. So you put that together and you're scared these zombies are going to chomp your face off. And it had really terrible dialogue, just like you'd see in any horror movie. But worse, because it was just localized Japanese dialogue. As I recall, the "Here's the lockpick. It might be handy if you, the master of unlocking, take it with you." Barry said that. Yeah, that also was named the worst.
Makes perfect sense.
That was the worst game line ever, as voted by the fans in the January 2002 issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Well, that's just because the fad of "all your bases are belong to us" is way past.
Yeah, I know. And the cool thing about Resident Evil, and this had really never happened before, you know, we'd have multiplayer gaming sessions where everyone would sit around and play, you know, Street Fighter or even like Bomberman on the Super Nintendo. But when we got this game, after work, a bunch of us would get together. You know, we probably have, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 people sitting around in the basement. We'd turn off the lights. One guy would play the game, and we'd sit around in the dark playing in a 20-inch television while somebody plays through Resident Evil, and it was like watching a movie.
Yeah,
it was
creepy.
Very, very creepy, and it was weird, and it was you know, you knew you were onto something sort of revolutionary at the
time.
It's
called not having sex.
Well,
nerds.
Speak for yourself.
Wow.
So that is my moment number 5.
I never played any of the Resident Evil games.
Really? No, you missed out.
I've tried a couple. I just can't get into them, so I never really paid them any mind. Eternal Darkness. That was good.
Yeah. Slightly different, but what are you going to do? So let's move on to moment number 4. Ooh,
number 4.
And we're just going to go around the room like we did last time. Adam, why don't you take us home with number 4.
All right. My next one might be a little bit more boring, but I remember it being a pretty huge accomplishment for being 8 or 9. But I beat Legend of Zelda the Second Quest in under eight hours.
Wow.
Wow.
And you bitch slap us about not having sex.
I was 8 or 9.
But then you really weren't.
Yeah. The Second Quest, of course, is attainable either by beating Zelda, or by just making your name Zelda. And I don't remember which way I did it. I just remember that my aunt, uncle, and cousins were visiting, and for whatever reason, instead of playing with them, I decided to just play Zelda all day. And I'd already beaten the game before.
In your typically selfishly gooey way, right?
Right. I'd already beaten it. I'd already beaten the second quest, so I don't know what came over me, but for some reason, I started it, and it was just going so well. I was like, and it wasn't one of those where I was like, I'm going to get every heart container, I'm going to do all this.
I'm just going to beat it.
I just blazed through it, and I don't know like what came over me, but I was proud.
Do you remember when Legend of Zelda first came out in the commercials about how this game had a gold cartridge? And you're thinking, what is this all about, you know?
It's a golden game. It looks fantastic.
It was really just to generate enough electricity for the battery inside.
Exactly.
Because it was the first game that had a battery backup.
Yep.
Thank God for that.
It pretty much revolutionized Nintendo.
Before that,
Nintendo.
It was all little like passcodes or something you had to enter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I almost had a passcode moment be one of my top 5. The 89 character passcode for Metroid. And
heaven forbid you write that thing down wrong.
Yeah, you're done. Boy. You start over. So, Jared, what's your top, your number 4 moment of a video game?
My number 4 would be the day that I mastered Killer Instinct for the Super Nintendo in about an hour. Or even less, maybe.
Yes.
I remember the game came out, and I believe a bunch of us, I don't remember who bought it, but we ended up over at someone's house, a whole group of us playing, just passing controls around, you know, winner stays, loser, you know, gives it up.
Yep.
And for some reason, I figured out the right twitching to get the character to do all the flips and spins and you know, 300 move combos, and I was destroying everyone. It was insane. I didn't even know what was going on. I somehow figured it out. And
Jared tapped.
I eventually had to actually just stop playing because people were just getting so angry with me.
Jared tapped into the Killer Instinct zeitgeist and
Killer Instinct, actually the oft-forgotten. It was like huge in the arcades. Mm-hmm. I think it was Rare, right? Rare made it?
Yep.
And it was supposed to be like a preview of the technology that was coming in the N64.
The Dolphin, yes. Yeah. It was back when it was still being called Dolphin.
And, was it N64?
Yeah.
No, I swear it was Super Nintendo.
No, it was on Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
And then that was, you know.
But that, I remember it was like, it was a launch game for N64.
Oh, yeah, the Dolphin. Right, right, right.
Because, I don't know. They made
that was like Killer Instinct 64. That's right. There was like a sequel for it.
Yeah. And it was supposed to be like arcade perfect or nearly or something like that.
Was it? I don't even remember playing it.
I don't know. I mean, it was 3D characters that were rendered out and then created. They turned them into sprites. So it was really no different than a Mortal Kombat at that point.
Except slightly better graphics.
Or what was the Clay Fighters?
Clay Fighters, yep. Another very similar techniques there. Back in the days when there were 8,000 fighting games.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Tournament Fighters. Mm-hmm. I had that one.
Oh, yes. A lot of good stuff. Well, congratulations on your fighting skills, Jared.
There's a few more representations on the list here. Don't worry.
Oh, I could imagine. So my number four moment took place in September of 2000.
Jeez, Mr. Detail.
I know. I like to do that. And it involves probably the first real online sporting gaming experience for a console. And I'm talking about the release of NFL 2K1 on the Dreamcast, which,
I didn't number it. It was on my possible list.
Okay. Well, for those of you that don't know, the 2K series was, in my opinion, it's the best football series that's ever been out there. I think it has always played better than Madden, and people can be mad at me and
This list, you've always said that. I rethought about it. I'm pretty sure it's just because all the years that it was, available are the years that the Vikings were good. And what you do every play, you would throw the ball deep to Randy Moss and his 8-foot-long arms in the game. That's how long they are.
He'd catch it, do a twist, and run.
He was pretty insane.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that was in the original 2K. In 2K1, they made the Randy Moss not quite as perfect, but they did add an online component. So you could, if you just had a regular dial-up modem that was attached right to the Dreamcast, you could get in and play against people. Most of the people probably were local because the connection speed wasn't that great, and the technology was so new.
Yeah.
But we ended up playing against a guy in Minnesota. He had the name of Mossman.
Mossman.
And what he liked to do was he'd get the ball, he'd be playing quarterback, and he would just turn around and run backwards. So what eventually would happen, all the coverage would break down, and then eventually he'd just, chuck it down the field, and someone would be open.
Right.
Usually Randy Moss with his 8-foot arms.
Usually Randy Moss. And, he was just beating up on us until we finally made adjustments, NFL coaches
do. It was so annoying, because
Jared was there, by the
way. We like to play real football, not exploit the faulty AI.
Yes. so we would have to adapt to this, and eventually we just
went into a prevent.
Yep, we prevented, and Jared and I would, and the other thing is that Jared and I would be playing at the same time, so, it would be Mossman having a little bit of an advantage, because the computer never runs an incorrect route. It's very easy to capitalize on mistakes when you have two people playing defense. But we also had a third person there. I don't know if you remember that, Jared, but a good friend of mine, Al, was there.
Oh.
Alan. And he, in those days, they didn't have voice chat, but you could hook up a keyboard. And so while we were playing, he would be taunting him on the keyboard.
I was trying to remember who was doing the taunting.
And it was a lot of fun, and I think at the end of the day, we beat Mossman, and he left in a huff.
Oh, yeah, no, he disconnected before the game was over.
He wouldn't let us finish.
Because he didn't want it to go against him or something like that. He wanted to be undefeated. The thing.
There was no penalty for disconnecting. So, you're in the fourth quarter, you're going to lose.
Yank.
Done.
Yeah.
Well, we won, and we walked away victors. And
I was going to say, I got that game on launch day.
Yeah.
Because I got 2K. I got a Dreamcast probably 6-7 months after it was available, and I think that 2K was available on launch day. So I got that, and a few months later is when 2K1 was coming out, and I was like, okay, I'll play online, whatever. Within 12 hours of starting to play it and getting my ass kicked, I looked online. There was billions of exploits. This play will always, result in at least 25-yard gain. Yep. This defense will always prevent, 98% of the, different pass plays. And it was just like, all right, well, that was fun. And it's just like pointless after that.
Well, the thing is, if you're playing with two people playing on defense, you can kind of mix that up a little bit because
have real life friends.
I know.
So.
I know. It's very sad. And with that, let's move on to our number three moment.
Number three.
Adam, I'm sure you have some insight.
Oh, yes. My number 3-1 is similar to my number 5-1. It's my 10 or 12 or 14 or more, sometimes very often more, our gaming marathons of GoldenEye with my friends.
Oh, that was possible list maker on mine.
GoldenEye still,
slappers only,
to me,
I hated that,
was the perfect, not land setting, but like, you know, at home setting for... first-person shooters. I mean, pretty much every console first-person shooter since then has had, you know, split screen.
Yeah,
but none of them have been as good. And I don't know why it was so good, because we played on a 17-inch TV, you know, four squares, so,
frame rate, you know, 10 frames per second.
But for whatever reason, it was perfect. You play Golden Gun and you one shot into it, and you can do it. It's like I have no idea how on, you know, it's like. A 17-inch screen, so each box is, you know, I don't know how much it's
getting. It's got 2 inches. You actually calculate it. You know, how big is it going to be?
And if you play with radar mode on, like, you're the radar is, like, you know, minuscule. But somehow, like, you're able to look. And I'm colorblind, but I was still able to see where that dot was. And I was like, here we go. We're playing rocket launcher only. Oh. And you're like, all right, he's coming around the corner. Shoot the rocket launcher. And it's like, I don't know. But
you'd always have a distinct advantage against the people that didn't use the radar. Right. You know, that was always the key. You know, use the radar and look at their screen to see where they're at and dominate.
But no one could figure that out. I don't know why.
I always felt dishonest doing that.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's part of the game.
And it was great, like, playing with people right next to you, you know, and you blow them up. And it's like, usually you don't have more than four people. So it's like, you're not, like, you know, switching constantly. So it's like, started again.
Yeah, it was fun getting as many people as possible to curse when you had proximity mines in play.
Yes. Boom, boom, boom.
Nothing. And there were so many maps.
Even better, maybe remote mines.
Yes.
Nothing better than the sound effect of, you know, that golden gun shot, just like poof.
And if it misses, or if it misses you, and like you're in like one of the little the tunnel things or the air vent things, and you hear it shoot, and it ricochets near you, you're like, fuck. Yeah. I don't know.
They're on to me.
Right. And you don't know what to do. You're like, all right, they missed, so maybe I'm safe. But if I move just a little back, I don't know which way they are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's golden gun mode, so you're screwed.
You're done. Yeah, we had a number of GoldenEye moments ourselves.
GoldenEye was a big deal.
You know, I think within the past couple years, Earl and Jared and I and some other people fired up GoldenEye just to see how it would
hold up.
And it didn't really hold up that well. It's almost impossible to play compared to today's technology.
And part of the problem is that we've gotten used to the control scheme where you move and look independently. Yeah. And GoldenEye didn't really play that way.
No, you couldn't do that.
It did do it to an extent. I mean, at that point, I was mostly playing Quake and Doom and stuff like that. You know, so it's like I was used to mouse, keyboard, independent and everything. Yes. And, I mean, with the N64 controller, you could get it to an extent, because, I mean...
You could use those four face buttons.
Right, because the configuration I used, it was joystick would be look, and then the C buttons would be move, and then the D-pad would be, like, switch weapons or something. So, like, maybe that's why I had an advantage with it, but, yeah, it was good.
Good times.
Stuff. Double pistols is always so much fun.
It is. Good times indeed. Jared, you have a number 3 moment.
Yes, and this is the one of two appearances of Street Fighter II on my list.
Wow.
This would be back in the day when we worked at Toys R Us.
The naked Chun-Li patch.
And there was great anticipation for the Super Nintendo release of Street Fighter II.
Probably 1992, somewhere in there.
Yeah, somewhere right about there. And this was a big deal. I mean, it was an $80 game.
$80 game.
Can you believe it? So anyway, release day, we get the game. We set one up in our display Super Nintendo system,
which
in
is
the
probably,
electronics case.
Probably not what we should have done, right? But
probably not, because it was really counterproductive. those of us who had keys and access to the case, we ended up getting a few rounds in, and that's exactly what happened when myself and one co-employee named Jim, everyone who knows Jim will know who I'm talking about, we're playing, and I'm playing Zangief. I've never played Zangief that much. I've never had much success with his moves. But for some reason, on this day, I was in the zone.
Well, you seem to be in the zone a lot on fighting games back in the day.
I guess. Somehow, it just clicks with me. And I decided, you know what? I am going to rip off a 360 pile driver.
He's gonna do it. He just decided I'm going to rip it off.
It was the first time I'd ever done it, and he was just in utter shock. He was just mouth... drop down to the floor. He
like a Tom and Jerry.
Couldn't believe that he had been humiliated so badly. And I was just like, wow, I can't believe I pulled it off with the Super Nintendo controller.
And you're playing this game right in the middle of the store.
Yes.
You know, no wonder Toys R Us stock has dipped so deep into the heart of the abyss.
Come on,
it started with you.
That was about the time when those of us who had been there for a little while could do no wrong. Essentially, mm-hmm. We could pretty much do whatever we wanted.
Clearly, you were doing wrong.
I was playing Street Fighter 2 and ripping off 360 pile drivers on Jim.
He was testing it so he could better inform.
Mind you, this was on a little 13-inch television.
Yeah, it was tiny, you know. And that was even before the days where they had display units. I mean, it was in a glass case with the TV running,
yep.
And you just put in a cartridge, and then if it had some sort of like demo screen, it would run. That's if not, it would just be like the title screen. That would be it.
So for me, that was a really big deal, pulling off that move and humiliating Jim.
Well, congratulations on that. If there was anyone that deserved humiliating, it would have been Jim.
Yeah, right on.
My number three moment took place on a very momentous day in video game history. That would be October 26th.
Of course. It's got the date.
2000. Any of you guys want to take a guess?
October 26th, 2000.
Yes.
No.
Adam, you're a smart guy.
I still lived in D.C. October... I don't even know if the Xbox, I don't know.
That would be the release date for the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
And it was an interesting time for PlayStation, for I think video games in general, because up to that point, if you wanted to get a video game system on release day, you could do it fairly easily. You know, I mean, I believe for like N64 and even Super Nintendo when they were released, you know, you could go in that day, get it. They might have had pre-sale type tickets to get it.
N64 was pretty popular, but
yeah. But I mean,
you could get a pre-order the week before, and you still could have gotten it.
Nothing was as popular as the original PlayStation, so
yes.
That's what kind of put it up there.
That sort of set it off. Well, I mean, even the original PlayStation, it wasn't that hard
right,
to get.
That
it
was
initially.
Like that was more of like it, you know, like over. I mean, that was out for like 7 years, right? So like that was like
yeah. Well, it wasn't quite that long, but yeah, I mean, it was. It was a turning point for video game systems. Mm-hmm. Not only were there lines for people waiting, for it overnight. There were bundle packages, which was a new thing, and it's only gotten worse over the past 7 years or so. But PlayStation 2 was interesting because not really anticipating the demand. I thought, oh, I'll just head over to Walmart about 11 p.m. to one of those all night Walmarts and pick it up. And, you know, I go out to that Walmart, and there's probably 50 people in line. So I'm thinking, this just ain't going to happen, but I'll give it a go. So I got up early the next morning, the actual release date, and went to a Walmart in town that wasn't an all-nighter, and there was probably 100 people in line.
Oh, no. It's getting worse.
So I'm doing this in tandem with a guy I worked with, and we just decided we're going to try to get one, and he was going to hit certain stores, and if there was a possibility to get in line, he would do it, and I would do the same. So I was driving down the 494 strip in Bloomington, heading towards Edina, and at the time, you know, there was a Best Buy store there that was fairly new, but not anymore, maybe than five years old or so. And I'm thinking, oh, I'll just go there, they'll get the most units. There had to be 300 people in line. I mean, it went around the store. It drove by. It looked like some sort of like gypsy carnival or something like that. You know, a nerdy gypsy carnival. People had tents and sleeping bags, and that guy was there. It was pretty frightening. And so I knew that was out. So I kept driving, and I'm going in my head, where can I go? Where can I go?
South Dakota.
Yes. So for a little bit further down the line, there was a CompUSA. That's what it sounded like. It was insane. You know, you could hear it from the freeway. There was a CompUSA, there was a couple Target stores, same situation. And, you know, probably an eighth of a mile away from the CompUSA, there stood a Circuit City. And this was about 6 a.m. And guess what? There wasn't a single person in line.
Funny.
It was very strange because every other place in town had someone waiting.
This is the one at France?
Yep.
In France?
Yep. Yeah. And I got there. I had a lawn chair, and I just parked it up against the... the wall. I called my buddy Ken, said, Ken, get over here. We're going to be number one and two. And sure enough, we were numbers one and two in line to get the PlayStation 2.
How many people wound up getting in
line? And I think they only had like 6 units there. and we were turning people away. We sort of made a list of who was there. And I guarantee no one was going anywhere at that point because by that time the fever pitch was really high. The manager of Circuit City came out about 9 a.m., gave everybody tickets. You know, that was great. And my wife actually stopped by, brought us breakfast from McDonald's because she worked right down the road. That was, I knew that she was aces in my book with that one. And I had to get a bundle of, let's see, a PlayStation 2, an extra controller, Madden, which I planned on getting anyway, and FantaVision, which I never actually played, which, for those of you that don't know, is like a fireworks puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
And a good experience, and it also started the trend of me never having problems getting a system on release day, even though I probably didn't deserve it. I mean, I got the...
even though you didn't put out the effort ahead
of
time.
I got the Wii, which I actually had to go and get a pre-sell ahead of time, but I did get it. I got the 360. Xbox 360, but I got that online through Best Buy, which was a complete joke because nobody got it online except me. And I don't know if I got anything
You win,
else.
I guess.
Yeah. So, and I got an Xbox later on in the release cycle. So that, that was my number three, and I'm proud of it.
I remember that day. I was still in D.C., and my coworkers and I were like, let's go get breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't work very hard. And we'll go by the Best Buy.
We'll just go pick one up.
Well, no, we were like, let's because I don't know how you missed all of this. Like, I remember we were like, maybe the line will be short.
Yeah.
Because it was raining that day.
I mean, I kind of thought that too. I just didn't
think
it would be as
crazy. Our whole intention was to go and sell it on to buy ones and sell on eBay.
Oh, you're one of those.
Because they were already listed for like double, triple on eBay.
700, right. 1,000.
So we were like, let's just go see. You know, we'll go get breakfast. And so the Bagel Bakery is in the same shopping center as Best Buy. Mm-hmm.
Wait a second. You went to a bagel shop?
I know. And we pull in. I was waiting for someone to catch that one. We pull in, and it's the exact same.
Yeah, chaos, Armageddon.
It's just, yeah, the line. And it was a brand new Best Buy. It was like 2 years old at the time, and it's wrapped all around. And we were like...
Like nerds waiting for a Phantom Menace.
In the rain.
Wow.
It was like raining pretty hardcore, too.
And the percentage of people that would actually get one would be probably a tenth of those people.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes. My question for you guys is... Are video game systems more popular now, or is eBay responsible for them being more popular at launch?
Well, it certainly
the fact that people can turn around and sell them at double the price.
It certainly doesn't hurt, but you know, I think that today versus 15 years ago, there's a hype machine that the media gets involved. They're going to go out and film it, and it whips everybody into a frenzy. Like, we have to have this.
I also think that the number of people that actually buy them on eBay is lower than what people think. Like, you know... 1,000 people might list them at triple price. Yeah. But
who's really going to buy those?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of them sell, but I'm skeptical that, you know, people are making a fortune off of this.
I think initially people can do quite well if you can be right on that first level, but after that, who knows?
Is it just because the gaming audience has gotten older?
Yeah, I mean, we are, the average gamer is about our age, you know, early 30s. So, you know, they get more disposable income. They can buy this stuff, and, you know, we like to wait in lines. The nerds like to wait in lines. That's the reality of it, whether it's worth it or not. Moment number two.
Number two.
Adam?
Mine's a weird one.
Shocker.
I went with finding out about the pirating community on the internet. Because without it, I never probably would have played Warcraft 2. Because that's how I got my copy of Warcraft 2. And
way to admit it. Feds, go get them, Feds. See?
And Duke Nukem 3D and StarCraft.
Well, your story is so compelling that Jared's pulling out a nap map.
Been a long week.
Descent and, I don't know, pretty much every other program or game that managed to get ported over to the Mac that I can think of. And Warcraft 2 is actually unique in that it had online play available for the Mac version before it had it for the PC version.
Wow.
The PC version had it through this really archaic IPX connection thing that...
I don't even know what that is.
It emulates another computer on the internet to pretend it's on a LAN with you, and you play a LAN game that way, you know, like you're actually networked together, whereas the Mac version had built-in IP play, internet play.
Yeah.
So it didn't have Battle.net, which is what Blizzard uses for its games now to match players up. It's before that, but you had your IP, you had your friend's IP, and in the pirating community, like, you know, all the Mac people are on one side, all the PC people are on the other side. It's like all the Mac people are already there, and you know, you're playing it anyway. My big quote-unquote claim to fame for that is that on the AOL pirating rooms and stuff where people traded all this stuff. Warcraft 2 is not there yet. Someone uploaded it to my FTP site. I then uploaded it to AOL, and
you were the man. Around.
Well, I'm sure it, you know, it, then a million other people were releasing it almost at the same time, so it would have gotten out there anyway. I was just, you know.
So, Adam, bring down the community of World of Warcraft.
Right. I think Blizzard is okay.
Right,
they're doing all right.
Hopefully, the statute of limitations on that one passed.
Hopefully,
yeah, that was like 95. So,
well, fingers crossed. You didn't kill anyone except maybe an ogre.
Right, good one.
Thank you, Jared. In the middle of mid yawn, he's going to tell us his number two.
Wow, you
got
to point it out to everyone. I'm trying to be quiet, and you got to poke fun.
No, I mean, come on. This is a pretty big show. People are really excited about it, and you doing what you're doing, which is bringing us down.
Yeah.
It's got to be pointed out and crushed. Absolutely crushed.
Are you done?
No. Okay, I'm done now.
Thank you. My number two would be the day they decided to make all video games free at the University of St. Thomas. Because that's the day I did not go to any classes, and I learned how to play Street Fighter 2 from the people who knew how to play it. Up until this point, I had tried to get in and play some matches against the people who had already mastered it, and I would just get destroyed. I didn't know any moves, and they certainly weren't going to show me how to perform any moves because they, you know, enjoyed beating up on me.
Mm-hmm. Taking your quarters.
But then one day, they decided all the games are free.
And wait, forever? There's an arcade at the University?
There was an arcade.
There was
back when I was there.
There was an arcade at the University of Minnesota, too.
So. Okay. This was 91, 92.
Yeah.
And yeah, just like one winter day, all the games were free.
Forever?
For the whole day.
Okay.
Just, you know, you didn't have to put any quarters in. It was great. And they had MTV playing back when they had videos, you know. Mm-hmm. So I basically hung out there the whole day. Did not go to class.
And you became
an expert. I learned how to play Street Fighter 2. And the best thing it was, because it was free, everyone who knew how to play it was like teaching people how to play it. No, you got to block. Okay, this is how you do this move. You know.
Was it announced like in a student bulletin, or you just happened to stumble on it?
I think there might have been some sort of announcement. There was definitely a post, a sign, or something in the arcade that said, you know, on this date, free play.
And then no one went to classes, so they decided never to do it again.
The Street Fighter machine was very, very popular,
and it was broken.
But everyone was really fair. They were really, you know, really open about teaching and rotating through, and nobody like. You know, I tried to hang on to the machine all day and things like that. So that was just a great, great day.
Let me ask you, if you had to generalize, which race taught most of the moves?
Well, it was all white kids, pretty much.
Oh, really? Oh,
no Asian kids?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, because in the arcades that I played that game in, it was all Asian kids, and they would destroy you. Like this, like 6-year-old Asian kids would kill you each time.
Yeah, no 6-year-old Asian kids at the University of St. Thomas.
Well, you guys will.
I think I did break for like a grilled cheese sandwich around lunchtime, but then I was right back down.
Wow, a grilled cheese sandwich. He even remembers his meals.
Yeah. They made a great grilled cheese upstairs in the grill.
Is that the end of your Street Fighter moments? Do you have any?
I have no more Street Fighter moments on this list.
I'm kind of curious why you omitted your fighting game battles with our friend Earl.
There's just so many of them. Yeah. I couldn't narrow it down to one specific one. But other than I'd find the key to destroying him and repeatedly do it, and he'd be pissed off that I would repeatedly do it. That's all.
Very nice. And he would get angry, and he would use Chun-Li in the head stomp.
Which was pretty easy to defend against.
Yes, just do a little Hyrukin, and there you go. Good times. I wish I had some of that on video.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you wish you had those lots of things on video?
I really do. I really do. And there's a lot of things on video that I have that I don't want on video.
All right.
My number two moment is old school, folks. 1980, we're going back to the Atari 2600 and the video game Superman. And that pretty much was the beginning.
Out of nowhere.
That was the beginning of my love affair with video games. I remember it pretty well. My mom at the time had a boyfriend who probably was our age at the time, maybe a little bit younger than that, and he had an Atari 2600. I was too poor to have that. I mean, back in those days, I think they were $300. And $300 in the early 80s or even late 70s, it's ridiculous. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't imagine people spending that much money, but they did.
People bought PS3s.
So I had to play.
True.
I had to play via friends and family. Actually, my family didn't have it either. So it was mainly friends, and then eventually my mom's boyfriend. He had a stack of cartridges, and he was nice enough to let a 6-year-old play. And the game that I really took to at the time was Superman. Fairly complicated game for the Atari 2600, and like all games for that system, it was pretty much blocks, so it was like a peach-colored block for a head, a bunch of blue blocks for the body, and then like a sort of a wavy red blocky line for his cape. And you had to go through and accomplish a number of things, save people and put together a bridge and stop Lex Luthor. Nothing really that cutting edge of the game about the game, except that it was cool and it was where I first learned to be proficient at video games. And I never looked back. So suck it, in television.
Yeah.
That brings us to the momentous number one.
Number one.
As the robot said, it's number one, and Adam is going to tell us the most influential, impactful video game moment or something of his lifetime.
Or at least the one that he thought of in the last week.
Right. Exactly. The last 5 minutes, because Adam preps.
I have a whole printed list.
He does have a whole printed list. Okay, last, printed, the last 2 hours.
Do you have a printed
then?
Budget?
Mine is when I got the logo turtle to wrap the entire screen. That's not right. No. Did you guys play Logo? Or it's not really a game, I guess. Logo? No?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, people...
Isn't that the gay channel?
I think it is. Yeah, is that logo. The gay channel now?
It's one of them.
Yeah.
Jared knows them all.
That's not really it. Logo is... Logo was the old turtle programming language that we used in first grade and kindergarten? No? All right. Anyway. someone out there will recognize it. In fact, my old roommate Adam and I have talked about it before. Anyway,
call into the voicemail line and tell us about it.
My real logo. One is which one am I going to go with here?
He doesn't even.
It's the number one, but he hasn't decided on it yet.
My number one was a lock.
I guess it's the day World of Warcraft came out.
Wow,
as sad as that is.
Highly predictable.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you knew how you were going to be spending your free time for the next 2 years.
Yes. It's kind of remarkable because, I talk about how fickle I am all the time. I'm never, like, my attention... My attention span is, like, it's remarkably short. It's like...
It's ADD all the time.
Exactly.
Adam, we're doing a show. Come back to us.
Put your Game Boy down.
Like, I really like Knights of the Old Republic. I remember because I was playing that around the same time as... I mean, it was nice with Old Republic, too. I was playing one of them around the same time that WoW came out. And I was, like, just so into it. And, you know, I was, like, 12 hours in, and I was like, all right, whatever. And I didn't pick it up again for, like, 4 months. It's just, like, I just lost it. But somehow, I haven't stopped now.
I think we need to delve deep into your psychological profile and find out what the real problem is.
Anyway, so my
Wow.
Probably top tier ones on there would be my first character to 60, which was the original level cap. Unfortunately, it's a female night elf hunter, so I get made fun of for that.
Female.
The Scoop World of Warcraft update. Don't bogart the dazzling mithril rapier, Adam.
Not an actual item in game. Some of the other ones are like my guild's first kill of Ragnaros, who at one point in time was the highest boss in the game, Gruul, who isn't, and then Void Reaver, who is our latest boss that we've killed.
Well, way to go.
Thanks. Right on.
Jared.
Mine isn't nearly as exciting now after listening to Adam recount his tale of beating the second quest in 8 hours, but my number one video game moment was the day that my friend Thomas and I decided we were going to play The Legend of Zelda from the beginning on Super Bowl Sunday while the rest of the adults were watching football. And that was pretty... We just decided we're going to play it. I don't know what you want me to tell you. There's not a lot of detail, you know. We played the game, we beat it, and we dabbled in the second quest. We thought, we've already played the whole game. What are we doing now?
Yeah. You just start in 8 and you go back to 1.
Did you have to blow in the cartridge to get it to work?
No. Our Nintendos were working pretty well.
Very
actually,
nice.
It was my Nintendo, I believe. I brought it over to his house. And it was my game, and we switched off playing. And
here's the big question. What technology changed between the Nintendo and Super Nintendo to prevent that from happening?
It was actually...
The spring-loaded mechanism.
Yeah, it's the loading mechanism which caused the problem.
Because the NES2 with the top load seemed to work perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's how that spring-loaded thing just would not make contact with the cartridge. Okay. And while it was neat, it really didn't work very well over time.
So we basically holed ourselves up in his bedroom, watched it on his little 19-inch television.
Naked.
There was no nakedness, but
he did say dabble.
I believe
there's a bee in here.
Oh, so my lord.
Where the hell did that come from?
There's really actually bad. A bee in... That is very strange. Might be a wasp.
I have an unnatural fear of them, too, so this should be exciting.
I don't know what to do about that. Anyway, so I believe I remember his mother popping in now and again, bringing us, you know, glasses of milk and cookies and sandwiches.
I gotta
whatever,
go, guys. I'm sorry.
To keep us fed. I'm
very scared.
The song's coming up shortly. We'll take a break and we'll take care of it.
Okay, my number one moment.
Quickly, race through.
Yikes. My number one moment, and Adam is leaving the room. He's got an air gun.
I don't understand where that came from.
That's very strange. My number one moment took place in the year 1997.
And it clearly felt taunted.
And it was the release of Mario Kart 64.
Oh, my.
For the N64. Now, this game is well known for its multiplayer. It's kind of, it goes in the league of GoldenEye, and, you know, you'll have debates with the nerds, which is better, GoldenEye, Mario Kart.
GoldenEye.
For me, it was always Mario Kart, and it was the battle mode. It was
sucked
different
at Mario Kart.
Jared was terrible at it, so he never used to play. So I used to play this with different groups of friends, so Jared was not as involved in this. But we would play battle mode. It was the donut board, and wow, I thought the bee was biting me. Literally, we would play hundreds of games at the same in one night. We would just keep going and going and going. Jared is a bee hunter. He's like the croc hunter right now, everyone.
Where is it?
This is very exciting. Yeah, but Mario Kart, for us, was the pinnacle. We actually would make up rules where we would make teams, which you could not do that at that time. So you could end up knocking your teammate out depending upon, you know, when you were shooting your shells at each other. And like I said, we would just go on and on with this thing for hours. And we probably played it for a good 6 months to a year straight before moving on to something else.
I was always shocked at how well that one held up. Because you know how my opinions are. If I'm not good at a game, it's not good.
Yeah.
So
I kind of share that opinion.
Yes.
So like I was just like, I mean, I liked actually I kind of liked single player, but multiplayer I just was terrible at. So I was like, but yeah, it definitely held out, and a lot of people played that instead of GoldenEye, and I was always like, no.
That was the game. I mean, we developed a whole language of trash talking. I bought a special hat. I have a gaming hat that I still have.
That was born from Mario Kart, huh?
Yeah, I believe it came from Mario Kart, and I'm proud of it. So there you go. We're going to keep this show rolling while we can get into the song and then kill some bees, Jared?
I think so.
Okay, everybody, that was the top 5 Scope video game moments. I hope you enjoyed it. I know we certainly did. We looked back, and maybe next year we'll do the top 5 future video game moments. We'll speculate what it could be.
Ooh.
Halo 10. That's what I'm going to say. So, everybody, this is The Scope. Stick around for Scope Sounds right after this.
Once again, it's time for another edition of The Scope Male Genitalia Euphemism of the Day. Today's euphemism is the Bald Avenger. That was The Scope Male Genitalia Euphemism of the Day. Now, back to the show.
It's time to bust a move with Scope Sounds, the Scope Song of the Week. Drop that beat, homie.
Hit it! Courtesy of the Podshow Music Network at music.podshow.com. This old band called Hannah, so you brought it on yourself. I think most of us can say that at one point or another, brother. Check it out.
Pump and Jenny had some problems back in high school. I fell in love with her because she was so fucking cool. But when I told her that I loved her, she said goodbye. Kicked my ass, but that was then, and now she's my eye. Can't wait to tell her she can fuck off, and she brought it on herself. She brought it on herself. You bought with cigarettes and cash in everyone's time. Excuses fell and you're blowing sunshine. You covered at you, there's a lot of how you down now. A middle finger up your ass is all you need now. And everybody thinks you're worthless, and you brought it on yourself. You brought it on yourself, yeah. You brought it on yourself. You brought it on yourself, yeah. You brought it on yourself. Can't keep you. Driving me crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the scope.
Under the scope. Yes, indeed, it's under the scope, where we attack all sorts of different topics.
With our trident of truth.
Trident of truth, the grand poobas of pop culture. Uh-oh.
I'm dual-wielding.
Adam is dual-wielding. He's got an air can.
What's
and
in your bag of holding?
Three pieces of paper rolled up, and he's going to do hold those while he reads the news.
Let's I don't know why he thinks his penis is going to have any effect on against the bee. You can put that away.
Yeah. Use nasty knife. It's a Chuck reference. So, all right. Or it's a Gork. Gork. Yeah.
Wow. I was hoping his fear would speed up his delivery, but
I think it's hindered him. Actually, mm-hmm. He's preoccupied.
I'm telling you, I'm scared.
Okay, so what do you have? What do you have for news?
You can sense the tension. It's palpable.
It's kind of a short news week.
Okay, that's fine.
Because everything is related to Halo 3. So Let's just start with that.
Halo 3. What's that?
Yeah. Halo 3 registers the biggest day in U.S. entertainment history.
Is that a new Christian game?
I don't know. Let's find out. Xbox 360. Remember when Bungie was a Macintosh game developer?
Jeez. And Microsoft saw what they liked and went after them.
Crazy.
Halo was going to be a Mac game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Xbox 360 exclusive Halo 3 registers biggest day in U.S. entertainment with $170 million in sales. Microsoft announced that that Halo 3 has officially become $170 million in sales in the United States alone.
Made a bunch of money
in the first 24 hours. The Xbox 360 title beat the previous record set by blockbuster theatrical releases Spider-Man 3 and novels such as Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Wow.
So it's a media juggernaut.
People are more interested in pretending to kill than they are.
Well, you can't. I don't know that you can really compare these things together.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much everyone that wanted the game bought it.
Mm-hmm.
The game
is $60 to $100 and something. So, you know, somebody goes to see Spider-Man 3, they're paying $12 maximum.
Right.
Now, let me ask you this. How would you pay $100 some for Halo?
There's the collector's
edition. There's three different editions. There's the standard, the deluxe, and then the... Wow. There's one other one that comes with a whole series of things and a miniature Master Chief head and all sorts of stuff. So, helmet.
Can you wear it while you're playing?
No, but it's about the size for cats, actually. It's about that.
That'd be exciting.
Hmm.
If anyone on the show gets one and does not have a cat and would like to give it to me for a day to make my cats wear it, I will do that.
They can become the ultimate fighting cats.
Yes.
Laser cat, if you will.
Nice.
I don't know what else. 1.7 million copies of the game were pre-ordered in the U.S. before a single store opened its doors at midnight on the 25th, making it the fastest-selling game in history, surpassing the previous record of...
Halo 2.
Halo 2.
Wow, Halo 2, big time. I own them both, by the way.
Number three.
Just got that out there.
Yeah.
Jared is clever.
So
I own Halo 3. I'm enjoying it. I've just started playing the campaign mode, but the meat of the game goes in the multiplayer mode. And
Do you have co-op campaign?
There is co-op campaign, but I haven't really participated in that.
That's the only thing that really interests me because I've told you how I'm kind of burnt out on first-person shooters in general, but I think that co-op campaign is an interesting thing.
Playing through a game with somebody else without the game being changed in any format is pretty impressive, actually. Mm-hmm. And doing it online, not with them sitting next to you.
Right.
So you guys get a Xbox 360 when you get the chance.
So I can play with a friend and not have them in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we don't have to look at each other's ugly faces.
Don't like personal contact.
No, you're very funny that way.
Next up, I know we almost exclusively have anti-Sony stories, but here's a pro-Sony one.
Well, I'm going to pout.
In Japan only. PSP has overtaken the DS in Japanese hardware sales.
Oh, really?
Wow. Putting the PSP over the DS, the Wii, the 360, the PS3, and the PS2. It is the number one selling console in Japan.
That's PSP? Seriously?
Yes.
Well, they have a new design on it, the Slim. But it's also because everybody in the country already owns a DS. What else are they going to buy?
Right.
That's it.
This is happening because of the latest installment of the Final Fantasy series.
Oh, that's right.
Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII.
They love themselves a little bit of Final Fantasy over there in Japan, don't they?
Yes.
They sure do, Shane. They love that Final Fantasy over there, tell you what.
Is that new character? Hillbilly Jared in the house or what?
Sort of spice up the show. That's
I like it.
In North America, it's...
You could roll with it or you could mock me. And if you mock me, it goes away and then we never have entertainment anymore.
I was just asking what it was. It was Hillbilly Jared. That's it. Everybody, if you love Hillbilly Jared, please send all your comments into I love Hillbilly Jared at thescopeshow.com.
I'm not setting that up.
No, set it up, Adam.
Anyway, yeah, North America, it's nowhere close to that. It's like an 8-to-1 margin or something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So it's, and then worldwide, it's something like a 5-to-1 margin. So it's, but in Japan, and I mean, it's important for, you know, bragging rights, especially for those two companies, to have the highest selling console. So there you go.
It's interesting that handheld systems are outselling regular consoles.
They don't have any space. They just stand there and their arms are trapped to each other.
There's such a microculture.
Yeah. Everything's tiny over there.
It's still interesting.
It is quite interesting. What would Hillbilly Jared have to say about that?
He wouldn't have nothing to say about it. Tell you what.
I'm fixing to buy me a PSP.
He's too busy roasting turtles.
Isn't that some sort of programming language?
So, yeah. Anyway, next story is, you know how NBC brought back first Battlestar? Technically.
Yeah.
NBC brought it back to Sci-Fi.
Yep. Did a bee just fly into my face? Because it felt like a bee flew into my face.
I haven't seen the bee.
Okay.
then this year,
this is Jerry Seinfeld. Don't worry.
Bionic Woman came on, and now NBC's announced Knight Rider will be coming back to TV.
Really?
Yes.
Again.
Interesting.
Here's the thing.
Did they already do Knight Rider 2000?
Let me read this.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Enlighten us.
Let's see how angry everyone gets.
Don't I have a Knight Rider?
NBC has attached director Doug Liman. Lyman, thank you. To helm a 2-hour pilot for revamped Knight Rider.
He's half lime, half lemon.
The article states that the goal is to make the show a quote unquote Transformers inspired reworking of the role that the Hoff made famous.
Why does everything have to be Transformers inspired?
Just because, if you listen carefully, that is the Lucas household exploding into fury.
There is a likely chance the 2-hour telefilm / pilot will be picked up by NBC and turned into a series. Whether this means all 70s, 80s sci-fi shows are going to get revamped and become Transformers inspired has yet to be seen.
What does that mean? Does that mean turn into a robot?
Yeah, I was going to say, is Kit transforming into a robot now? Is that the deal?
Doesn't say.
The article, is Shia LaBeouf playing the Michael Knight role? What's the deal?
The article hints that Kit and other evil cars may, in fact,
just evil car
transform.
No.
Wow. God. How do you have? I mean, what kind of budget?
You already have a car that can drive itself and talk and be snooty. And why does it need to transform into a robot?
Well, maybe the transformations will all be implied. Like, they'll be like, look at that. Like, they'll show a car, and then they'll cut to a person and be like, look, that car is transforming. They'll make a sound, and then the camera will go back to the car, which is now a robot.
Do you think that all the super fans will be upset if they don't have the original voice of Knight Rider?
Mr. Feeny?
Yeah, Mr. Feeny.
Michael.
Michael, why are you eating that Wendy's hamburger in such a sloppy fashion?
Michael, I'm going to go in here and powder my nose.
Michael, you have a big hairy bear beer belly. Ooh, I just boofed that one big. Wow, it's the bee. I'm scared of the bee.
So,
Michael, my sensors say that two men are approaching.
What are you doing over there, Adam?
He's scared of the bee.
I know. I'm seriously getting...
It's in his ear cups.
He's very nervous.
Freaking out.
Okay. Is that it for news, Adam?
No, I got one more.
Okay.
Everyone's excited about that, though, I guess. So that's good. The last one is...
Can we get Kit to read the news?
This general story of media...
Our last story.
Media Defender and the hilarity that broke this week. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story.
We have jobs.
Okay. Yeah. Media Defender is a company that... set itself up and then went to the RIAA and MPAA and other, you know, media conglomerates.
Mm-hmm. Lots of double A's.
And
yep.
said,
What's going on?
Here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to
NAACP.
Put
Energizer AA batteries.
We're going to put pirated movies and TV shows and music out on the internet, and we're going to get the IPs of the people. Like, we're going to act as a hub for pirated material. We're going to, you know, get it out there to other sites. We're going to make our own site, and we're going to get you and your lawyers all the IPs from these people that are
people
doing
it. People to sue, pretty much.
So they started this process 18, 24 months ago.
Yeah.
They were so bright that they bought a domain with their own email addresses. So, like, they bought this domain, then they transferred it. But anyway, you could still see in the records that it belonged to, you know, so-and-so at MediaDefender.com. So that all blew up, the latest thing that's happened to them is that they made this honeypot site.
Don't tell me about the honeypot.
Here he comes.
It was like called mevee.org or .com, I forget. And it was basically, it was like the Pirate Bay, you know, or one of those torrent sites where all of them would be.
Which I never go to.
Added, right, exactly. But that was found out and it didn't work out for them. So now they're quietly waiting for everything to die down to make a new one. But in the time that that's happened, one of their main people has somehow, for whatever reason, forwarded all his work email to his Gmail account. But due to a really sloppy password on his part, someone hacked his Gmail account and exported his entire work file out. And now it's on every major torrent site.
And what have we learned from this?
Well, there's a lot. And I'll put the link on there because it's pretty hilarious. But I just have an example email that was sent out. And it's titled, "Reminder, Simpsons movie premieres this Friday," and then in parentheses, "to torrents." And then it has all the different things that everyone at the company has to do. Decoy files are available to torrents on the media server. Use public trackers for pre-leak releases. Create two new trackers for this product. Send a list of 5 release names from each torrent team. Remember to put input. Anyway, it basically gives information on how to submit it to all the top torrent search engines and get it out there and...
So pretty much pirate people out there, people, hackers and such, are angry about this company, and they're going to do anything they can to bring them down.
Yeah. And also there's some of the emails seem to imply that, they're keeping track of you know, like how many times the Linkin Park album was downloaded. Yeah. And one of the things, it's like, John, please, you know, give RCA the numbers on the Linkin Park album. We're not tracking it for them. So, you know, the more the better. Implying that RCA isn't paying us for this. They, you know, want to find out maybe for future information.
So make up a number.
Let's make it look worse than it is. So.
Wow.
A little shady. Or a lot shady.
Here's the thing. I mean, the people who in that community are 2, 3, 4 steps ahead of anyone who's trying to trick them into downloading bogus files in order to get their IP address. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's over, people. Piracy is here to stay. You can't stop it.
You lost the battle.
Find a way to work with it and make money that way, because it's just the old model is gone. It's been blown up.
Yes.
There you go.
Sorry. Sorry you had to hear it first on the scope. But.
Yeah. breaking news. Our sources are saying that piracy is here to stay.
Word on the street.
Word on the street. Does that wrap up the news, Adam?
That's it.
It does. So let's wrap up the news and move right into reviews. What do you have for us today, Adam?
Yeah, what are we reviewing? I'd like to know.
First album. First thing we're reviewing is an album.
No way.
Yes. It's the new album from the Foo Fighters.
No doubt purchased legally.
Or not purchased at all.
We're reviewers. We get review copies.
Oh, I don't even have it on my computer, though. That's what I meant.
I don't understand.
I listened to it all. Hold for edit? Oh, right. How did I listen to it? How did I review it if I don't have it?
I think you're going to bullshit your way through it. That's what I think.
All right. Anyway, Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace is the 6th studio album by the Foo Fighters. Their first one since 2005.
I don't have a number 6.
Double album.
Can we say it's the 5th one?
How about it's their number 1 since 2005's...
Number 1...
2005's double album, In Your Honor. Unlike that 2005 release, where one album was more rock and the other unplugged, Echoes sounds more like your typical Foo Fighters album, with a mixture of arena rock, slower ballads, and everything in between. The album's second track, Let It Die, takes a full 2 minutes before you hear anything other than Dave Grohl and an acoustic guitar, while the final 2 minutes of the track are full of strong drum lead beats and a wailing Grohl. The Pretender is the album's first and
I think the Wailing Grohl was in a Tolkien novel.
This is true. Spelled differently, but...
He had his own language.
Hello.
The album's first single and opening track, The Pretender, gets the album off to a great start, sounding like it was meant for the band's second album, The Color and the Shape, which is actually produced by the same guy that produced this one. The opening duo of this and Let It Die make for quite a nice pairing.
I'm told I'm just another soul for sale. Oh, well. The page is out of print. We are not permanent. Temporary. Temporary. Same old story.
I don't remember that being on the album, but there it was.
That was a special edition.
Next is another typical Foo Fighters rocker, what with its hard and fast, then soft in repeated ways. It's the oddly titled Cheer Up Boys, Your Makeup is Running. And while I have no idea what that means, I like to pretend it's Grohl making fun of the millions of eyeliner-wearing rock bands out there. Also, the opening riff sounds exactly like the Pixies' song Alec Eiffel. The Rhino Made For All the Cows from the first album. Anyway, that's it. That's the album. It's out. It's number one in the UK on the iTunes pre-sale list.
So. Nice.
So there you go. Shane, what do you think?
I think that this album suffers a little bit like the previous album, which is I felt it was a little uneven. Overall, Foo Fighters, they as a group can really put together some awesome songs, but there's so many tracks on the album, not so many, but there are a number of tracks on the album that just don't do it for me, and I would probably just kind of fast forward or get rid of them. That being said, you know, Dave Grohl is still awesome, and I think he's cool, and I hope the Foo Fighters go on for as long as he wants them to. I just wish that they could maybe have a complete album, and that really hasn't happened for me since probably the second release for them. So that's my take on it, and I'm going to pass it over to Jared, super fan of the Foo Fighters.
I think for the most part, I do agree with you, but as you say, I am a Foo fan, so I'm going to give them a little bit more of a pass. My problem with this album is that the first track, The Pretender, is, for me, it's an all-time favorite Foo track. I mean, maybe not all-time favorite, but it's in my top five Foo tracks already. I just love that song. And nothing else comes close to it on the album. So it's kind of like you get this really, really strong beginning, and then it's like, okay.
Yeah,
I like some of these songs, but I really want more of that first song. I want something that's got that same intensity. And then you've got the weird acoustic instrumental track that is, I guess, nice, but completely out of place on this album.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't fit, you know, as far as the tones go, the production. It sounds really, really out of place. So, but yeah, but I, you know, overall, I really enjoy the album, and I find myself liking the songs more and more as I come up on shuffle, which seems to be kind of a trend for me with albums lately. I tend to not like them as much on the full sit through, but like the individual songs as they come up. So,
Jared, when Dave Grohl is composing a Foo song, what type of furniture is he sitting on?
He's on a futon.
Exactly. Yeah,
he's on a futon. And Adam was walking out.
Come on, it was funny.
No, it wasn't.
You're a douchebag. And what did you think of this album?
You know, I think the bee landed in my mouth. it's you know what? Like, I go back and I listen to the old Foo Fighters albums. They're all like this. They all have one or two songs I really like, three or four that I thought I liked, but in hindsight, I'm like, they're just okay. And then the rest are just like, I forget that they existed. And it's really disappointing because I've seen them live twice, and they are far and away the best band I've ever seen live.
They're very good live.
It's ridiculous. Like, Dave Grohl is great at just like telling stories in between songs.
He seems like a cool dude. Like, you'd want to hang out with him. He's not full of that rock star BS. You know?
And they feel like a band that really hasn't compromised themselves at all.
And he's from my hometown, you know, so it's like I want to like all this stuff, but it's just like, I don't know, like I listen to him and I feel the exact same way you guys do. It's just like, you're almost pulling for them, and it's like, I don't want to do that. Like, when I already like a band, I want to grade them harder than a band that kind of surprises me, but then I feel bad because I'm like, I don't like any of them, so...
Interesting.
But, you know, I liked a couple, and I liked enough here and there to be entertained through 65% of the album.
Sure.
So, I don't know.
Which, you know, is better than a lot of albums nowadays.
Yeah.
It's really hard to make an album that's good from beginning to end these days.
You know, if you take every single great Foo Fighters song from all of their albums, you'd have one hell of an album, but we would call that a greatest hits.
Yes.
That's what we would call that. Let's give this the greatest score.
The score is 2 3/4 stars.
So I think, what do we learn from that? The Foo Fighters get a little bit of benefit of the doubt because they are the Foo Fighters, but I think we all here were hoping for an album closer to 4 stars.
Mm-hmm. Maybe next always time. Hope for 4 stars, yeah. Shane.
That's true. We're not going in with a negative, except for Adam.
I don't pop on the new 50 Cent thinking it's going to be 1 star. I mean, I'm expecting 4.
You want 4
Did
stars.
I get 4? Probably not, but...
That's what you want.
I'm expecting 4. I mean, if you've been shot 9 times, you can give me 4 stars.
Exactly. Well, let's see if you get 4 stars out of the next review, which is...
Kid Nation. It's the latest entry.
Well, thank you for that.
Well, you asked what... I'm just trying to answer
and
you.
And I got it.
Today, yeah. So anyway, I'm going to read this word for word now. That's what you get out of me.
Let's see if you do it well.
We take a look at the latest entry in the world of reality TV, CBS's controversial Kid Nation. The show, featuring 40 children aged 8 to 15, was shot at the Bonanza Creek Movie Ranch, a privately owned town built on the ruins of Bonanza City, New Mexico, 8 miles south of Santa Fe. In Kid Nation, the children try to create a functioning society in the town, including setting up a government system with minimal adult help and supervision. The program was originally scheduled to air in the summer of 2007. Do you know why it was moved? Was it because it got such good
buzz? Yeah, I think there was such a buzz on it that they pushed it.
That's good. In our first clip, let's listen to the host, Jonathan Karsh, as he introduces a key element of the game, the town council.
Bonanza City is just a few miles that way, and you're going to be there for the next 40 days. But don't worry, you've got each other. You've also got 4 leaders. And they were chosen because they represent all of you in age, geography, everything.
Everything.
They're your town council. And I think I hear them coming right now.
That was a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. That guy, that host, by the way, his claim to fame, he's a documentary movie maker. He's never really done anything like this before. I was doing research, so.
Interesting. He's also the illegitimate spawn of Jeff Probst and Lisa...
Ling?
No, not Lisa Ling. What's her name from...
Lisa Gibbons?
Lampinelli?
Lisa Lampinelli?
Lisa Lampinelli. There we go. Kid Nation forces the youngsters to really tough it out and behave like real Old West pioneers. In our next clip, a 10-year-old beauty pageant contestant, Taylor, talks about the challenges of being away from home.
Taylor, what's wrong?
I just, like, missing home, and I just miss my own bed, and, like, getting to eat protein, like, and meats and all, and just, like getting, a meat eating a healthy meal, so it's real hard.
You're glib.
I love that.
I'm beauty queen. I don't wash dishes.
Oh. Protein. She's always so focused on protein.
Well, for what it's worth, her parents are Atkins aficionados, yeah. So it makes sense. Kid Nation can be seen every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Time on CBS. On to the reviews. And I guess start with Jared this time.
I struggled with this show initially. I felt, you know, some of the elements of the show were... They felt overly contrived. I think, you know, bringing in the town council was obviously a choice to somehow bring some conflict to the show immediately instead of them just being kids. Hey, we're all going to get along. But I don't know. After, over the course of the show, I started getting into it, and I really started liking most of these kids. I liked the fact that, you know, some of them really, really took charge and stepped up and like said, you know, we got to do this. You know, and others were little brats, and I don't know, there was a lot of diversity. It was just fun to watch. I think my only real complaint about it is the fact that they get paid to do certain jobs, and what they can spend their money on is candy and soda. And it's like, is that really the best example we want to be setting? But, you know.
Or some old-time roller skates.
Or books.
But still, I mean, that's
King
fine.
King Henry VIII.
Who's getting books?
That stuff's all fine.
Jared got books.
Yeah, the nerd. The nerdiest kid of the bunch,
and
Jared.
And the nerdiest kind of weird little kid is named Jared, and it's perfect. I think he's the best. So, in the end, I really found myself liking it, and I like the second episode, I think, a little bit more now that I'm into it. Who's next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
I love this show. Like, I mean, it is what it is. It's way contrived, and there's clearly, like, a ton of producer interaction. You know, like, all the... what are they called? The confessional type things, you know, where it's like a one-on-one.
Which every show has now.
Right. But, and it's like, you know, the kids, like when Jimmy was sitting on the dock, you know, and like the things they say.
Might as well just jump into a boat and go home at that point.
The things they say, and you're like, wow, kids, I can't believe they say that. That's because they're completely told what to say by the producers. But then when they do say things that kids really do say, like, let's catch that jackrabbit. Hear the rock. Like, that, they're stupid, and that's kind of hilarious to me.
Yeah. They don't want to clean the dishes, so they just throw them outside, just laying there. Right. I mean, it looked like a junk pile.
And I think that Sophia is awesome that she basically whored herself out for a bike by dancing for money.
She got her bike.
What I think's hilarious is there was, I think, $18 total in the Bonanza City economy after the first day of work. You know, everyone had done work and all that stuff. There's $18. She controlled $3. She controlled 1/6 of the entire economy.
Wow, she really is thinking a lot. And then she put it into an old rusty bike.
And then she bought a bike. But she still, she only has, she has the one mode of transportation other than feet.
Yeah, so she can escape.
and then she was like, she's the only one that called out the town council, and they still gave her $20,000.
Yep.
So she clearly is.
She's
setting
the Richard Hatch of.
She
much.
Is going to set up another government, clearly, and overthrow them.
Well, she's got the powers to do it.
Yep.
I thought this show, I mean, to me, it's very formulaic. It's Survivor meets Summer Camp without the voting out. I think the show kind of struggles with that issue, that there really isn't any sense of conflict or
Hey, why does the Indian change. Kid run the convenience store?
I don't know.
There's conflict.
That is conflict.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not quite as compelling if you're just waiting to see if someone's going to leave. You know, it's like. Yeah, whatever.
I can see
but at the same time, it
but
is
they are kids.
It is kids, you know. So you have to, like Adam said, you have to kind of take it for what it's worth. I graded a little bit lower just because it is such a derivative of other shows that have been out there. I mean, it follows the Survivor format. It follows the Survivor voiceovers. I mean, everything is such a Survivor / Amazing Race type of look and feel. Not to say that's necessarily a bad thing, because those are the. You know, the gold standards of reality programming.
Is it a Mark Burnett show, too?
Yeah, I don't know if it is or not. I don't know if it is or not. I would almost
it's
say...
It's a CBS show.
Yeah, I'd almost say no, but...
How come only CBS can pull off these shows?
I don't know. Yeah, they try to take the high ground.
Are you going
to
keep watching? Are you going to at least keep watching until the kids drink the bleach?
The bleach and poison. You know, in our house, the wife likes the show a little bit more than me. And I don't find it offensive. I just find it... more of the same of what's out there. See, so I will watch it.
I'll watch it till Kooky Jared leaves.
Jumping over barrels.
Like, you know, the controversy that behind the show.
Yeah,
like,
utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, like, seriously, you know, on one hand, you can be like, what parents would let their kids go? And it's like, well, don't parents let their kids go to, like, 8-year-old kids go to summer camp all
exactly.
the time?
Exactly.
It's exactly the same,
yeah.
except that I bet that they're getting paid other than, you know, the 20,000. Yeah. I bet that they're getting some sort
they
of
all,
stipend.
They all
stuff,
do get a stipend. So. And the thing is, the what difference does it have in terms of summer camp? I mean, in summer camp, kids are given structured things to do. You know, they are given responsibilities just like they are on this show. Just there's a little less adult interaction.
Well, and honestly, summer camp's probably more dangerous because you don't have cameras on every kid.
Probably.
You know, like if the producers see something bad, I guess other than drinking bleach,
they would step in. That's an easy, right. you know, mistake to make. So let's give this thing a review. Score.
The Scope score is...
That doesn't make any sense.
3 stars.
The bee stung me, and I'm going to some sort of weird shock, completely ruining my ability to do any sort of scope.
You'll be okay.
Talking.
Obviously, you can't host, so...
I can't.
Adam, take over.
All right.
So, pretty good score there for a reality show.
Yeah.
I will definitely keep watching.
And
me too.
Jared will keep watching, and I'll keep watching, so...
See, my thing is, I don't really like Survivor, so I don't care that it's a ripoff of Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, I watch Survivor pretty much regularly.
Check back every other week for your Kid Nation update, right here on The Scope.
Absolutely. Well, as we have talked it up, it is the fall television season. It's on us, and things are happening. And
they are.
Everyone knows that when new shows come up, we like to implement something called the Random Review.
Get ready for the Random Review of the Week. It could be appalling, it could be incredible, but it's always unpredictable. The Random Review of the Week.
God, it's been months since we've heard that little tune.
I know. Jared, how many shows were in the Random Review hopper?
I believe it was 56.
It's a lot to pick
the most, the biggest list I've ever had for the random review.
So why don't you spin it and see what we will review on episode 39 of the Scope.
We're going to get girlfriends. Just watch.
Girlfriends we already did last year, so.
It's off.
It's off the list. Here we go.
It'll come back.
It's spinning.
It is spinning.
Round and round it goes.
We've actually got a spinning wheel here. We stole it from Price is Right.
The show is Aliens in America, the CW, Monday, 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central.
I kind of want to see the show. It's getting pretty good reviews
Aliens
overall.
Aliens in America. Let's write that down.
So I don't know how we're going to record this, Jared, because at our house we have like 18 shows going on at the same time on Monday nights. It's going to be very problematic.
It's always the internets.
The internets.
Real quick, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it. What did you guys think of Journeyman?
Didn't watch
it. I liked it.
I liked it a lot. Did you see the ratings?
No, I didn't.
It got basically zero ratings. Oh, so I'm concerned because I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Is that the show that comes out of Heroes?
Yeah.
Boy, that's really
bad. It lost
bad.
A lot of Heroes. Like Heroes.
They lost everything.
Some people are like, maybe it's because of it was available on Amazon. It was available on like 80 different places before.
Yeah.
Because
I watched it from Amazon Unbox.
Yeah. And it was on Comcast on demand. It was on a lot, and apparently it got pretty good ratings on that, but I'm really hoping it sticks it out because it was good.
It took me a bit to go, okay, what's going on?
But by the end is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good.
Hey, everybody, we have an extra special random event. Our next show, we're going to be bringing back one of our favorite bits, the random year in review.
Yep.
So we've got to spin the random year in review wheel and see what comes out of that.
Here we go, Shane.
Oh, it's the same sound.
Is it the same wheel?
Same, Jared quickly just put years on it.
Oh. I did. And the random year is?
There's 56 years on this, too.
1983.
1983. Adam, how old were you?
3.
3 years old. So he's got a lot to say about that year. If you all recall a random year in review, we will all talk about our favorite or most influential albums and movies of that year.
I hope I was at least off breast milk by then.
Probably not.
Okay.
Are you yet? That's the question I want to know. Okay.
No comment.
That was a little across the
line.
Can
you get that canned?
I apologize. Final bit, Under the Scope, coming soon. Adam really put your heart into it this time. The rest of the beginning part of the show, you sort of phoned it in.
Huh.
This is where you really got to kick it into high gear.
Interesting. All right, music, October 2nd. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, who, by the way, were on the Today Show today.
Really?
And it's all they played. I hate Bruce Springsteen, by the way. I think it's some of the worst music in the history of the world. So
there you go.
Adam says it
must be true.
I only like a couple songs. Some of his like real
stuff. I appreciate his influence, but I don't.
I appreciate him for telling Ronald Reagan no, but I don't like his music. Dashboard Confessional,
blech.
Annie Lennox, Matchbox 20.
I'm a big Annie Lennox fan. So
Matchbox 20 didn't break up. That he just
it's actually
had a
greatest
thing.
Hits album with a few new songs on.
Oh, funny name, Exile on Mainstream.
Peter Griffiths here.
Speaking of that laugh, did
it's
you watch the Star
now.
Wars episode? Because that was fantastic too. The Star Wars.
I would argue that it was not fantastic.
Oh, I thought it was really good.
I thought it was too much time spent trying to recreate Star Wars and not enough jokes.
Ah.
But the jokes that they had were funny. It just there was too few in there.
Fair
but
enough.
I like the end conversation
about Robot Chicken.
Oh god,
me
that
too.
Was funny.
October 9th, Kid Rock's new album, Rock and Roll Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what he's calling himself? That might cause
maybe
issues. Leanne Rimes.
He's starting a new religion.
J-Lo. Oh, but on here it says Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Lopez?
That's her adopted
son. Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Lopez, I guess is how you pronounce that.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer.
And She Wants Revenge. Hey, so back-to-back week, we get Dashboard Confessional and She Wants Revenge. So that's pretty much an awesome 1-2 punch.
You get it all.
I think that makes an excellent holiday gift.
Mm-hmm.
Next Friday, Talking October stuffer. 5th, The Heartbreak Kid. Because we probably need a few more Ben Stiller movies where he gets... kicked in the ass and in the face and the balls a couple times. You know, he kind of looks like he. No,
is that a Farrelly Brothers
yes,
movie?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it could be good, but
yeah, whatever. He
wow.
looks like a monkey, and like every year he looks more like a monkey. Have you noticed?
Have you
that?
Seen his father? I mean, he looks like his father.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, he's just starting to. Yeah, starting
he's
to
not
move into
age
that look.
Yep. He's shrinking.
October 12th, The Golden Age, which is, for whatever reason, a sequel to Elizabeth, the movie that Cate Blanchett, she won an Oscar, right?
Mm-hmm.
She won an Oscar, so...
part two of a trilogy.
Let's do more.
Oh, really? I want to see it.
I never saw the original, so I kind of know what happens, I think. We Own the Night. This is the Joaquin Phoenix, Mark Wahlberg movie where they're brothers. One's crime. The other is a police officer. And
very
they,
original idea.
Yeah.
You're always going to have one hunt moment from
and,
Adam.
And Michael Clayton. Why? So this week, The Heartbreak Kid's the only movie, and then next the following week, there's a bunch of movies.
Well, nobody wants to go up against Ben Stiller.
He's a powerhouse.
Juggernaut.
Yeah. Box office gold.
This is true. What's it called? The Night at the Museum was like the number one grossing movie last.
Ben's got pull. Monkey or not.
Michael Clayton is the George Clooney law movie with the most boring title in the history of the world, Michael Clayton. And Lars and the Real Girl, a delusional young man played by Ryan Gosling, strikes up an unconventional relationship with a doll he finds on the internet.
A real doll.
Like a real doll? Like that's the actual, like the product real doll?
I believe so.
Okay. Found on the Howard Stern Show.
It's kind of gross.
DVD. Gross. October 2nd, this coming Tuesday, 1408, Comedians of Comedy. There's another Comedians of Comedy album, CD?
I don't know what it is. But
Comedians of Comedy are Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, and two other people.
Lisa Lampanelli.
No.
Steve Martin.
No. Entourage, season three,
Carrot
part
Top.
Two.
When's the Killers of Comedy DVD coming out?
Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, How I Met Your Mother, season two, Jericho, season one. Sure. Misery, the Collector's Edition, and Sarah Silverman, season one. That's the day before her season two premiere.
Very timely.
Is that coincidence?
Probably not. Would call it marketing.
Yeah.
October 9th, 28 weeks later, Evan Almighty, Family Ties Season 2, Poltergeist 25th Anniversary Edition, Twilight Zone the movie, and Surf's Up. It's quite a hodgepodge.
Pretty much the beginning of the summer movies being released on DVD.
Excellent, because I saw none of them almost, it seems like, but I probably saw a lot. Video games, awesome. The week of September 30th. Oh, well, there's a lot. NBA 2K8. Are you going to be getting that?
No.
Because you love the 2K series.
I always sucked at the NBA game.
Project Gotham. You know what I really dislike about those is that there's no real, like in the basketball games, there's no real way to, you know,
win?
To play it right because, or to even make the game right because inherently, a basketball player misses usually 50% of his shots.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how do you tie that into the game without, you know,
frustrating people?
Right. It's like baseball, you know, it's like when you're swinging, and then there's a percentage based on, like, you know, how the pitch was. And hockey, you know, it's like you can pass it. And I mean, but basketball I never felt was honest.
You know, there's one thing Adam can do is make sports really boring.
Really? Oh, he's done. You're the B.
He breaks it down to the mathematics of it.
Project Gotham Racing 4 for the 360. The new DS Legend of Zelda game, which maybe I'll get in pirate on my... meant to show you guys this earlier.
Oh, look at that thing.
My DSX. See that?
Very impressive.
What does that do?
You hook it up to a USB cable to your computer, and you can put ROMs on it.
Nifty.
Yeah.
Boy, what? That's amazing. What the pirate community won't come
and then,
up with.
And then watch this. Watch this. Blue LED lights.
Wow.
That makes it legitimate.
Is that so you can light your way when you're locked in a dark hole for stealing
games?
It's
because it's cool. NBA Live 2008 for every console and Superman, friend or foe. I bet friend. What about you?
That'd be Spider-Man.
You think it's going to look better than the 2600
Superman.
Game? Oh, I meant Spider-Man. What?
It's Spider-Man, Jared, not Superman.
Okay.
Anyway, I still bet friend. Then the week of
that's a good chance of it.
Week of October 7th, Half-Life 2, the Orange Box.
Sorry.
Probably means orange.
FIFA, no, it doesn't. It's orange.
FIFA 2008, Star Wars Battlefront Renegade Squadron for the PSP. Wow, that's niche. Sega.
Niche.
Not in Japan.
Who says niche?
Niche.
Niche?
I say niche.
Sega Rally Revolution or Revo. And Donkey Kong Barrel Blast for the Wii. Look, a first party game for the first time in like 4 months for the Wii. That's good.
Is that a drinking game?
It will. It
should be.
Frat boys will turn it into a drinking game. And by frat boys, I mean us. So
we're starting a frat?
We could. And
a,
should.
A frat of
that's
three.
For the University of Phoenix online.
Very nice. They got to have one. Is that it for coming soon? I take that as a yes.
Yes.
Under the scope. Well, Jared, it's been a really long show. I didn't think it would be, but damn, we got a lot to talk about. What do you have to talk about to close it up?
I'm trying to decide if I should edit my comments down here.
Okay. I probably would have done that ahead of time.
It's the bee's
fault. No, I'm just, I have, you know, because we're running long. I'm gonna economize here.
So we're not going to insult anyone. We're just saying sometimes we got to edit for space.
We're going to go for some brief comments here. Adam Laszlo writes in and says, I clean my bathroom while listening to this episode, referring to number 37.
I soil my bathroom while listening to this episode.
Well, that's a pretty common
response. You soil your pants while doing this episode.
Yes.
I soil my pants and then rub them on the bathroom floor. It's very odd. Very odd response, but, you know, sometimes the mood just strikes me.
We should have edited that for time.
Very true. Gary writes in and says, a couple of years ago, I went to a midnight showing of The NeverEnding Story at the Uptown. And yes, it has a ton of gay subtext in it. But it's not really subtext that if it's that close to the surface. So there you go. Molly also writes in and says, I don't think Father of the Bride or The NeverEnding Story are anything to be embarrassed about.
What?
I love both those movies, and I'm not embarrassed. I don't think either of you, Shane or Adam, dug deep enough. Especially you, Adam. I know you like some pretty embarrassing things. I picture a finger waggle in there somehow.
I agree. I feel that both of our selections were weak, Shane.
I think you're a douchebag.
What?
Why would that be weak?
Father of the Bride, come on. Young Einstein, I feel, went out there. I feel that was, you know, like, while I still like it, I feel that that was... Because when I told Jess, she was like, no one liked Young Einstein.
That's
like,
not true.
She was angry.
Wow. I guess I could have said, like, Police Academy 4. But I will say that Amy Grant pretty much, you know, evened everything out. Thank you.
Yeah, I escaped any sort of negative comments when it came to my album choice, which I thought was a stretch. So thank you, everyone, for taking my side in things, I guess. If you'd like to take my side a little bit more, you can read an email to comments@scopeshow.com or call the voicemail line 206.
No one ever does, though.
507056. Maybe if I obscure the number by mumbling it, people will
What does
will
it strain take, to listen. People? Call!
You have interesting voices. You have interesting things to say. We want to hear them. Or if you just want to fart, go ahead. We don't care. Do something.
You're sending that one out to Adam.
What?
Hello?
Back to you, Shane.
So, everybody, this has been episode 38 of The Scope. Don't forget, next time, random year in review. That year will be 1983. Men at Work, big that year. Tootsie, I believe, came out that year. We got a lot of things going on in 1983.
I was 10. Woo!
I was 9. Adam was still breastfeeding.
Yes.
Or maybe. I don't know. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. At any rate, everybody, thank you for listening. Make sure you tune in next time for The Scope.
Out.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing 206-350-7056. Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying, Belle nuit. Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.
Number one.